Welcome to the PapaCast on the links. Now here's your host, Bob Papa.
Welcome to another edition of the PapaCast Golfcast. This is a very special week, U.S. Open week, second major of the year, and it's being contested at a venue that's held more U.S. Opens than any other. We're joined by the 1978 PGA champion who won at Oakmont, the one and the only John Mahaffey. John, welcome to this edition of the PapaCast.
Thank you, Bob Papa. I appreciate it. Nice to be on.
When you think about a major coming back to Oakmont, what's the first thought that comes to your mind?
It's a perfect venue for any kind of Open Championship or any kind of PGA. It's a major championship venue in the fact you have to drive the golf ball well. You have to be able to put the ball in the proper place on the green, also in the fairway. And the greens are faster than lightning, so you have to pay attention.
John, we were there the last couple of years when the Constellation Senior Players Championship was held in Pittsburgh, and you were gracious enough to take us out there. Were you surprised at the amount of trees that they removed? They've created a very panoramic setting now where you can see a lot of the golf course. Does it change the golf course dramatically as you walked it?
I think it did a lot, Bob, because I think it takes away a little bit of your depth perception on a lot of holes. 12th hole, the par 5, 13th hole, the par 3. After that, used to be trees right behind the green, so it was easier to focus in on where everything is, and you could really tell, visualize a lot better. Now it looks like a vast nothing out there, so it's really hard to get the ball to know where exactly the pin is.
We'll get into this year's U.S. Open in just a little bit, but I want to talk about 1978, and you win the PGA Championship. Now, for those who don't know, you nearly won two U.S. Opens in 1975 and 76. So now you're a guy that is contending in majors, and U.S. Opens obviously are very difficult golf courses. So Oakmont sets up nicely for you. You didn't get off to the greatest start in the world, your opening round. Take me through that week and kind of what you were feeling about your game and where it was at.
Well, my game was not very good at that point. I think I'd only made about $10,000 that year, and I was really struggling. And Open was 75, played early in the morning, so I spent the rest of the day at the practice tee, didn't take a break for lunch, anything. And actually practiced into the darkness. And I thought I found something. Felt really good, so I took it to the golf course the next day. And the last 54 holes that I played there was the best golf I've ever played, from tee to green, probably the best I've ever putted as well. But and I wish that would have stayed with me. What I found, it basically was a very small thing. It was an alignment issue. I'd been aiming too far to the right, probably had been for quite a while. I kind of got a little bit more open where I could see the target, and I just hit the ball as solid, drove it in almost every fairway, never hit it into bunkers, the church pews at all. If I did get in trouble, my short game was good enough to get me out of it. So just a beautiful last 54 holes.
When you say that you shot 75 and now in solitude you go to the range and the practice area and you just start, you're hitting balls, you're trying to figure things out. Today when fans watch golf on television, Golf Channel will show the guys on the range before their round and they're doing their preparation. Sometimes guys are working on things after their round. Cameras are there. There's the caddy. There's always a coach. You guys didn't work that way. How did you self-analyze and figure out what was wrong? And what did you go through in that process to fix what was broken after that opening round?
Well, basically, I think we kept things a lot more simple than it is today in a lot of ways. You don't have as many coaches or teachers or whatever. And I was lucky enough to have Ben Hogan as a mentor. And Ben Hogan, I thought, and to this day still think, that he was probably the best shot maker that I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I've ever heard him hit a shot that didn't sound like it was solid. I mean, right in the middle of the club. And he only had five fundamentals. So, and they came in a sequence. So I was really a student of Hogan and an admirer of Hogan, and felt like if I could keep things simple, that if I got off a little bit, it was just one of these few things that it might have been. It might have been my stance. It might have been my grip. In this case, it was my alignment. So it was really a pretty simple fix, but you kind of have to go through things, and it feels awkward when you start making a change. But shooting 75, I really had no choice. And when I did make that change, in fact, it carried over into the next week when I won in Boston as well. So it was something that lasted at least 2 weeks.
So you make these changes. You're feeling pretty good about things, but it's one thing to do it on the practice tee. It's another thing to now take it out on the golf course. Did you have trepidation when you went out for that second round in day two of the 1978 PGA Championship, wondering, is it going to be like yesterday, or is what I found on the practice tee real?
Well, I was hoping what I found on the practice tee was real. I didn't want to have any more of what happened the day before. So making the change, I had to do that. After about the first five or six holes, I figured, okay, this is really working. This is pretty cool. And kept hitting fairways. I got a little more aggressive with things. We were lucky enough that particular year to have some rain, so the golf course really didn't have its full teeth. And it was a little bit easier to put it in a fairway. The ball didn't roll through. The greens were a bit softer, but still really, really fast. So, but you were able to control keeping the ball underneath the hole from the fairway and so forth. And I think I shot 67 the second round, then I shot 68, and then 66. So obviously I felt very comfortable with the golf course and very comfortable with what I'd found.
When did you think that you really had a chance to win, even though you start the final round off the pace?
Well, actually, I was seven back, and when I really figured I might have a chance.
Wait a second. Seven back.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, you're hitting the ball really well. You feel like you found something, and now you're putting good scores up. Were you discouraged that you were still seven back going into Sunday?
Not really, because Tom Watson was leading, and Tom Watson had really become a factor in golf. I mean, he's a major championship winner and really Hall of Fame bound, and one of my very, very best friends, still is to this day. And, you know, I knew what he was capable of. I was really just trying to finish somewhere where I could get into Masters and get some, you know, top 10, whatever, top 8, I think, at the time. So I really wasn't thinking about winning until we got through with the 10th hole. And Tom Watson made double bogey, I made birdie. So that's a three-shot swing. So all of a sudden, you know, it may be possible because I'm really hitting it close. I'm hitting a lot of really good shots, and I started making some birdies. Got a little bit discouraged at 16. I hit it on the green on the par 3 and 3-putted and gave a shot back, but ended up being all square when we got to the 18th hole, or the 72nd hole, and Jerry Pate had a putt to win up in front of us, and Watson and I were watching, and he missed a pretty short putt to win it outright, and Watson and I both knocked it on the green, and both of us missed our birdie putts. So going into the playoff, I felt pretty good.
What was it like? I mean, for those who haven't read John's book, I encourage you to go pick it up. It's not a long book, but it's a fascinating read. It's called Hogan's Boy. And it talks about your relationship with Ben Hogan and your growth throughout the game and life and so on and so forth. You and Tom Watson, very good friends at this point in your careers. What was it like competing for a major championship with a guy that was your buddy?
Well, I mean, we went through the PGA schools together. Lanny Watkins was in that group as well. David Graham, pretty good school. I would say maybe one of the best. And we competed forever. I mean, NCAAs all the way through amateur golf, so forth and so on. So, I mean, we were always used to competing. And on the golf course, you really didn't think much about that. We were friends off the golf course. We used to go hunting and fishing together, shot baskets together, all kinds of stuff. And really, really close friends, talked about a lot of stuff. And, you know, he'd won a few majors at that particular point. And I felt like I really hadn't given him away, but I was, you know, this probably would be my last chance. And he was very gracious. I remember this. You know, he said, "Well, JD, you finally got one." He said that at the presentation, which I thought was pretty cool.
So here you are. You see him miss the putt. Pate misses the putt. You and Watson make par. So now you're going on to a playoff, three-man playoff. First hole is a short par 4 that goes down the hill. Everybody makes par on that hole. Were you nervous when you stood on the tee, or did you feel like you had all the momentum going in your favor? Watson had blown the lead. Pate just missed a chance to win. Did you feel like momentum was on your side?
Well, I felt very confident in what I was doing, yes. When you have the quality of those players, Jerry Pate had won a U.S. Open 1976. In fact, I'd finished right behind him there as well, finished fourth, trying some kind of crazy shot at 18, trying to win the tournament. But anyway, I knew that I had my hands full and that I couldn't make any mistakes. And I was lucky enough to get it up and down at the first hole for all of us to tie with pars. And went over to the second hole, and they both had the honor in front of me, and they hit irons off the tee and laid up. And I thought, well, this is the one hole that I need to be aggressive on because I'm not as long as these two guys. Pretty long golf course. It's been wet. So I took out a 3-wood. In fact, a 3-wood that Mr. Hogan had given me years ago, and hit it absolutely perfect shot down the left side of the fairway, leaving me just an 8-iron into the green, and they had 5 and 6 irons into the green. So I was able to hit it in there about 12 feet. Pate missed the green short. Watson was on the front of the green, and I had a really good look at a birdie putt there at the second.
And you roll it in to win. Was there any doubt in your mind that that thing was going in, considering how aggressive you were? And now you've taken control of the hole by hitting 3-wood off this short par 4 that goes down the hill with the green back up. I think bunker's down the right-hand side.
Oh, yeah.
Did you feel like this was your time?
Well, I felt like this was the only time I had left, because if we kept going, the holes kept getting longer, giving them more of an advantage. And you've played that hole. You've seen it over on the left side of the green where the hole location was that day. It's probably about as fast as any putt you could ever have anywhere in the world. And I picked a line, and I put that ball right over it, and it's about a foot from the hole, and I know I've made it. And I jumped higher than I've ever jumped in my life. It was the greatest feeling, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it.
When the putt goes in and you finally achieve this dream, you've won a major championship. You've won it at a storied place like Oakmont, where Jack Nicklaus won his first major in the 1962 U.S. Open. Illustrious list of champions. When did it finally wash over you that you were a major champion?
Well, it took a while. I mean, I woke up 5 or 6 times in the night and went in and made sure the trophy was still there. You know, it wasn't just a dream. But it was something I felt like that I had finally been vindicated, that Hogan and so many people, Mr. Hogan, Jack Burke, Jimmy DeMeritt, all my friends, all the guys I played collegiate golf with, they all had so much faith that I would do something like this, and I felt like I'd kind of let them down in the past. Now I'd finally gotten there.
You know, you talked about Watson and the close relationship, staying at his house, him coming to your house in Kerrville, Texas, really spending a lot of time together. The third man in this playoff was Jerry Pate, who you had lost a U.S. Open to. You had an opportunity to win. Was it a sense of revenge to beat him, considering that there were some harsh words, some things that were said that didn't exactly, they weren't congenial to you when you lost that U.S. Open and he won it?
Yeah, I really wasn't thinking about that at the time. I felt like these were two premier players at the time right now. These were guys that at the top of their game, and this is what you work for so hard your whole life. This is what, when you're a kid and you're saying on a putting green in Kerrville, Texas, little ratty thing that we had down there, Bermuda grass, this is for the U.S. Open, this is for the PGA Masters, British, whatever. And this was a chance. This was something, a dream come true. Not too many people get to live a dream. We all gotten to live our dreams. I mean, Watson paid as well. And it's a marvelous thing to do that. I mean, to have accomplished that, thinking about where I came from and all the trials and tribulations and everything else, it was just probably the best feeling I've ever had in my life.
And now when today's players go to the U.S. Open, when it's played at Oakmont, you have a locker there. You're part of the history of that golf course. We had a chance 2 years in a row to go there. Mr. Ford, who's the head pro there, in fact, the first time we went there, he put the Sunday hole locations in for us, which was a lot of fun. What does it mean to be a part of that tradition? I know it means a lot to you to be a PGA champion, but to have it at a place like Oakmont has to add more to it than some of the, with all due respect to the other winners at other places. There are certain venues, like Phil Mickelson, he won his at Baltusrol. Davis Love III's PGA Championship came at Wingfoot. These are courses that have stood the test of time, and they cross over to the USGA and the US Open and the PGA of America.
Well, exactly. And the thing, these golf courses are so special. You have to be a shot maker. You have to be able to play the game of golf, not just play at it. You have to know what you're doing. You have to be able to trust your golf swing. You have to be able to rely on your patience. You have to be resilient. And I think it just proved to me that I knew that I was a pretty good player. Mr. Hogan having the faith in me that he did. And I think he helped me a lot early on in certain things, because I remember to this day we were hitting balls and he came over and he looked at me and says, you know, I see you hitting all these shots. And you hit a little fade, you hit a little draw, you hit it high, you hit it low. You do all the things that you need to do. Now, why don't you take them to the golf course and do it? Well, I did at Oakmont, and that's why I was successful there. I played solid golf for 3 days. Not so good the first day, but the last 3 days, probably Hoganish.
With that said, and before we get back to Oakmont in a second, but now that takes me to you winning a Players Championship, which is, you know, it's a deep field. That's, you know, the best of the best. It has a major feel to it. When you won the Players, were you able to rely on the fact that you were able to win at Oakmont and that experience helped guide you through that?
Well, yeah, especially the last hole, I had like a 2.5-3 foot putt to win the tournament. And you get over this putt, instead of worrying about one thing or another, that, you know, there's only two things that can happen. You either make it or miss it. All right, so you pick a line, and I mean, I rolled it right in the middle of the hole. Of course, it had a lot to do with the experience of that before. But the thing that sticks out in my mind most about winning the Players' Championship is that one thing that Ben Hogan had always stressed to me is that you have to have a go-to shot to put the ball in the fairway in the last nine holes of a golf tournament so you have a chance to win it. And my go-to shot was always a little low cut, a little left to right. Well, I promised myself that morning before I went out, and the last hole at the Players is right to left. It's a pretty big dogleg around a lake. And I promised myself if I was in contention, if I was tied one back or one ahead, I had the honor, I was going to hook it around that lake. And not my favorite shot by any means. I fought my whole life to get out of hooks. So when I got there, Larry Mize and I were tied, and I had the honor. And I hit the most beautiful draw around that, the best tee shot I've ever hit in my life in a situation where it really counted. And I'm so proud of that, just to being able, I'm determined to do this, and I'm going to do it, and I did it.
So you win the Players. Now we go back to Oakmont, 1978, Oakmont today. Obviously, they've lengthened the golf course, which they do to all these golf courses, but it still stands the test of time. What is the biggest challenge that the Players are going to face this week at the U.S. Open at Oakmont that is different than other venues that they go to?
Well, I think we always say, you know, you got to hit fairways and greens. We're here, you have to hit the fairway. You absolutely have to. If you don't, you cannot rely on your short game to do anything there. You're going to have to use it some, yes, but you're going to have to drive the ball extremely well at Oakmont to be able to have a chance.
Yeah, and anybody who watched the PGA Tour Champions last week at the Philadelphia Cricket Club, for fans that watch on TV, it was almost like a warm-up for fans watching golf to get ready for the U.S. Open this week, because, you know, even par was a good score, and if you missed the fairway, you were in trouble because the rough was thick and meaty, and the greens were lightning fast, and not nearly as fast as they're going to be this week at Oakmont, but pretty darn fast. So for viewers, that was a good, like, prep.
Oh, absolutely it is, and the rough is going to be actually much, much higher and thicker at Oakmont, so you really have to put a premium on, you have to have a go-to shot. This is what Hogan was talking about. You have to have a go-to shot to be able to put the ball in the fairway, major championships.
I want to take you, let's go through the golf course a little bit. On the back nine, are there any scoring opportunities that you see where, hey, these are the holes the guys better get, because there's certain holes that you got to play defensive?
Well, I think 11 for sure, because you got a short iron into 11. That's a birdie opportunity, and probably 14 as well. 17, you got it. 17 is a unique hole. It's drivable.
Yeah. I want to get. Let's talk about 17 for the fans that are listening that are going to be watching. It's a drivable par 4. However, a prudent, more conservative play might be the best play based on hole location, correct?
I think it is, definitely. We saw what happened to Jim Furyk there. You know, the last time the Open was there, he tried to drive that green and got in a lot of trouble a couple of days back-to-back. So, yes, it is drivable. I think the prudent shot in certain hole locations is to lay up, or you leave yourself a full shot that you can spin. It's not a very big green, and they have some places they can hide that hole. So you've got to be able to get it in there with something you can spin.
When you look at that hole, it's so inviting on the tee. Is this where sticking to game plans becomes very important?
Absolutely. I think you have to have a it depends on your situation. If you come there and it's your second to last hole and you've got to make something happen, then maybe that's the time to take the chance. If you've got to finish 2-3 to have a chance to win, I'd take a shot at it.
Now take me to 18, which is this monster par 4. When the U.S. Open was last there, Angel Cabrera hit one of the great – can you put into perspective the drive that Angel Cabrera hit at 18 in winning the last U.S. Open in Oakmont?
I wish I could. I've never hit one that far on a runway. He drove it 9 miles right up the middle of the fairway. They hit a pitching wedge in there. Is that right? I mean, unbelievable. And had to almost thread a needle because they've got bunkers right, bunkers left, and he just absolutely killed it up there. Probably one of the best drives I've ever seen in competition.
Huge green now that you got to deal with too.
Well, it is a huge green. It's got a lot of movement in it. And again, Oakmont, you have to keep the ball underneath the hole to be able to score there. Anything above the hole, you're playing defensive. Underneath the hole, you can be more aggressive.
So now as we look at the field here in 2016, who are some of the guys that you look at that you feel are going to be in contention and have a legitimate chance to win when we get to Sunday?
Well, Jason Day, he's just playing phenomenal golf right now, and he drives the ball very long. He drives it pretty well, accurately, and a terrific putter. Short game's awesome. I like him. Jordan Spieth, he needs to start driving the ball a little bit better. He needs to put it in the fairways there. He's got a great short game. We all know how well he putts and not afraid to go low, really, with a lot of birdies in a row. But he's got to drive the ball in the fairway. I'm looking for a guy that possibly like a Zach Johnson that hits a lot of fairways, a lot of greens, and is a terrific putter. And he can put the ball underneath the hole. He's got great control on his iron shots. I like him. And another guy that I think might, because he's playing really well right now, is Phil Mickelson. He's in the top 10 a lot. He's had I think in Memphis, he's right there again. So I think he's playing with a lot of confidence. He's just got to drive the ball better. He's got to put it in a fairway.
You know, when you beat Tom Watson to win the 1978 PGA Championship, you know, Watson never wound up winning a PGA. And he won all the Open Championships, Masters, U.S. Open, he won one of those. But he never won a PGA Championship. Phil is the sentimental favorite because he hasn't won a U.S. Open, and Lord knows he's had some opportunities. Can that get in your head as you get deeper into your career, wanting to win something so badly that you let the pressure get to you, even though he's as seasoned as he is?
I don't know if it's really pressure so much as these things linger forever. I mean, the two U.S. Opens that I lost, I still have nightmares from time to time about, oh my gosh, what if this, what if that? So if you could keep that from creeping in your mind and stick to your game plan, which Phil has, sometimes I think he gets a little too careless with stuff. I think sometimes he gets a little too aggressive. If he backs off a little bit and sticks to a game plan, maybe like at 17, maybe lay up there because he's got a terrific wedge game to play that way. I think it'd be great for the game of golf if he would win. Obviously for him it would be, because anything like that, I felt that way about the U.S. Open, losing back-to-back. I mean, that was our national championship. And, you know, winning the PGA, yes, that was terrific. But the U.S. Open, to me, was really the outside of Augusta. I mean, all of them are great, but the U.S. Open was really important to me, and I know it is to Phil as well.
It'll be interesting to see how he handles it, especially if he's in contention coming down the stretch because of, you know, the nightmares that he's had in some of the U.S. Opens. But, you know, guys that can really bomb it like Dustin Johnson. But you feel a guy like Zach Johnson, because of his brain and the fact that he's won and understands how to win, he can think his way around this golf course and he's not fazed by giving away yardage, is he?
No. Well, think about it. He's won Augusta. That's not a short golf course, and he's got an Open championship. All right. He's not afraid, and he does play the type of golf that you need to play. You need to put it in a fairway underneath the hole and be a great putter. He's all of those.
What about Rory McIlroy? You know, he was dominant there for a while. He's receded back a little bit. Are you waiting for him to break out again? It seems like guys are taking turns here. Right now it's Jason Day's turn. It was Spieth last year. Rory not that long ago. Could that happen this year, in your opinion?
I think he's got a great chance to do it, yes. I think the fire's still in the belly. I think he still wants it really badly. He's been working very, very hard, not only hitting golf balls, but getting in shape and getting much stronger. I think he's got a good chance.
When I say John Mahaffey, 1978 PGA champion, Oakmont, what comes to your mind?
A smile that comes across my face, and I think, you know what? Finally. That's what I think, finally.
What about being etched forever? Like, it's forever that you have this piece, and again, the world of golf will be at Oakmont this week, and you're forever. You're part of the history of a place that Johnny Miller shot 63 in the final round of a U.S. Open. Jack won his first in a stare down with Arnold Palmer. You had the great honor, and Rocco Mediate, of playing with Arnold Palmer in his last round at the U.S. Open. You're pretty intertwined with that place for a lot of reasons.
Well, yeah, and I think the whole thing about all of this is we all want the respect of our peers. And to be part of this terrific fraternity that we have out here on the PGA Tour that is so incredible, to call these guys my friends, to know that Arnold Palmer is my friend, that Jack Nicklaus is my friend, Tom Watson is my friend, Lanny Watkins is my friend. And you can call them and you can talk to them, and if you were in trouble, you know, they'd help you. This is the greatest thing ever, and we've always helped each other. Lee Trevino helped me tremendously, along with Ben Hogan early in my career. He taught me the bladed wedge shot. He taught me a whole bunch how to fade the golf ball. I mean, it was incredible how giving these guys are, and to be your friends makes it even more special.
So you've got all these friends. I'm going to just wrap this up like we like to wrap it up. We're going to have a little dinner. And John Mahaffey gets to invite whoever he wants to his dinner. Closed door. The content, the conversation in this dinner will stay in that room in perpetuity. Who would you invite to sit down and share a meal and share stories with and listen to?
Are we talking about living?
They could be dead. They could be alive. And they don't. Here's the other thing. They don't have to be golf. They don't have to be sports. They could be anybody that you really are interested in hearing their story.
First would be my father. He was so instrumental in everything I did. My dad never played sports, never could. He always had to work so hard. He was supporting three families at one time, and how he did it, I have no idea. But he was always there for me, and he would be the first one. The second would be Arnold Palmer. The third would be Ben Hogan. And, boy, the fourth would be a hard one to choose. I think my dear friend Lanny Watkins. He and I have a lot of stories that go back, and he's got a better memory than I do. So.
He won't let you finish. He'll dominate the dinner.
You think he would? I don't know. Lanny and I have become very close since we started working together, and I got all the respect in the world for all of the people I named, and I think that would just be a terrific dinner.
You wouldn't go for the expert on the black holes in space?
Phil Blackmore? I think we'd probably, everybody would leave the room if Phil and I started talking about all the stuff we talk about.
You like to get deep into the psychology of things and the technical component of it. Is that, where does that come from?
I don't know. I have a fascination with some stuff in physics and things, and I'm not that well versed in it, but I think it's incredible that how far we've come. Some of the string theory and the Big Bang theory and all this stuff, that how everything came about, where are we going to be in the future, how quickly we're moving, will we be interplanetary, you know, all that stuff. I think it's fascinating to me, and Phil and I talk about that quite often, and it's really kind of cool.
John, we appreciate your generosity with your time. This is obviously a really cool week. The U.S. Open returns to Oakmont. More U.S. Opens have been held there than any other venue in the United States. And we appreciate you sharing your stories and thoughts with us here on the podcast. And I encourage everybody, for more of John's story, pick up his book, Hogan's Boy. It's a fascinating read, and I think everybody would enjoy it. John, we appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Bob. A pleasure.
John Mahaffey, 1978 PGA champion at Oakmont, joining us on this edition of the Papa Cast Golf Cast.